you got a sense of just how broad this training is. But it is really one of the most important things we can do, because as each of you know, for every investment that we make in you is going to pay back 100-fold to the American taxpayer. And you all have really made an incredible commitment. Over 2 years, they have had to take 5 courses in 4 different thematic areas. And that's why it took 2 years to get them to this point. So they're our first graduates from this effort. But there are over 200 people right behind you who are already enrolled in the courses. So you guys are the tip of the spear, and guys and gals, sorry, who are the tip of the spear of this. But, the exciting part is the volume that's going to come behind you. And one of the most important things I hope you'll do for us is, as the first people through here, you know, we're not pretending we've nailed this, that we've got 100% right. We can always do better. And so we want your feedback as to what can we do? Where were the weak spots? You know, what can we patch up? What can we strengthen? How can we make this better for those 200, the 400, the 800 that will come behind you? And so we really appreciate your thoughts on that after having made it through 2 years. But I wanted to give you sort of some parting thoughts, some parting stories as to somebody who's had 25 years in the federal government and have now worked in 5 different federal agencies. And I think that the consistent themes that I have found that I will give you as sort of parting graduation thoughts to take with you. The first is maintain your integrity above all, wherever, whenever. It is the most precious commodity you have. And the Greeks used to say, though, it is like sand, and it as easily slips through your fingers unknown. You've got to hold on to it. You came into this job because, and people recommended you for this training program because of the outstanding qualities that you manifested in your careers. They saw in you future leaders of our government. And so that integrity has already been recognized in each and every one of you. Don't lose it. Wherever you go, however much power you might get, treat it as that precious commodity. You know, you are always there to serve the public. And I can think of no greater example of this as one of my heroes is George Washington. And in many cases in our country, because we see him everywhere, you know, he's on every dollar bill. You see him in the Washington Monument, the city, you know. We tend to take him for granted. I'm reading a great little book right now called A Short History of the World. It is amazing to you when you stop and think about the scale and course of human history. Recorded human history is only 5,000 years old. It's an amazing sort of, you know, when you think of the scale of geologic time, you know, it doesn't even show up. 5,000 years. In all of 5,000 years, you can count on one hand, on the entire planet, the amount of people who power was handed to and offered to, unlimited power, who turned it down. Now, after the American Revolution, things weren't going so well. The Congress had not paid the bills on time. Most of the soldiers weren't getting paid. We all know the story of Valley Forge. Supplies didn't show up. And all the generals go to Washington and say, "General, you cannot turn this country over to these bumbling idiots. We need a king. If we give it to this Congress, the whole thing is going to fall apart. We need a strong leader. Take charge. We will back you. We'll put you in charge. What we need is a strong executive." Washington is one of the great symbols of our country, and a portrait of this actually hangs in the Capitol Rotunda. It is that important. Goes to Annapolis where the Continental Congress is meeting, and in a very symbolic gesture, takes off and unbuckles his sword and hands his sword back to the president of the Congress and says, "You entrusted me with this power and this authority. I have finished the job. The sword is yours. I am giving it back to its rightful owner." Thereby creating a lot of precedents. First, the precedent of a human being who had enough self-confidence and enough integrity that they didn't need to listen to the devil on their shoulder. Second, it was the important principle of civilian control over the military. Two incredible things that allowed our Constitution, our Bill of Rights, our way of life to be launched and created as successfully as it was, and it still endures today. That's the level of integrity you need to hold yourselves to. Americans know it in their hearts and their guts. We may not even be able to tell you about it, tell you why, but in electing our leaders, in electing people we trust, we turn to examples like Washington. So as leaders of our country, you need to turn to those examples. And as you're making decisions, to be thinking of that level, how do I preserve my integrity? How do I honor that integrity such as George did? Second quick story. Be creative. Be creative and be creative listeners. I think most managers tend to focus a lot on what they're saying. And they don't appreciate all the value of what comes from everybody around them. And I'll tell you a quick story that sort of reminds me of the importance of this. Another one of my heroes is Nelson, Lord Nelson, Admiral in the British Navy. And Napoleon invades Africa. And he leaves his fleet to protect him along the coast of the Mediterranean there at Alexandria, a place called Aboukir Bay. And Nelson arrives on the scene and quickly surveys, sees that he is outnumbered 2-1. His main ship is outgunned by the French ship double. And in Nelson's sort of classic leadership strategy, he didn't convene a big work group and go study it. His whole strategy boiled down to sort of three words, have at him. Says, let's go. Doesn't even stop for a conference, just sails right into battle. But on his way, while they're sailing into battle, clearing for action, all the confusion that you can imagine, recognizing the odds, a young lieutenant on one of the other ships has an idea. Now, you can imagine if you all as leaders of our government, if you wait to the point where you're sailing into battle and sailing into action to convince people that you really want to hear from them and that you will take their ideas seriously, do you think anybody's going to have the guts to do it? You have got to create that climate of being a creative listener every day in the elevator, in the hallway, in the cafeteria, where people see you as accessible and know that you are approachable and know that you want their ideas and know that you will listen to them. Well, as it was, the young lieutenant had an idea and he saw those ships. And he saw where their anchor chains was. And he sent to the admiral, he says, look at their anchor chains. And Nelson immediately gets what the guy is trying to tell him and does a very risky action. The ships had anchored so close to land that the French Navy thought nothing could go between the shore and them. By looking at the anchor chains, Nelson was able to figure that those ships could swing. And there must be enough water between the shore on them to do that. And so he splits his fleet. You know, it could have gone down as one of the greatest disasters in history. They all could have run aground, would have been end of his career and everything else. So there's not only listening, but also having the guts to take a daring action. Splits his feet, sends up the ships on both sides. Guess what? On the one side of shore, the French hadn't even opened their gun ports. Totally caught off guard. And when Nelson, one of his barrages hits their powder keg in their lead flagship, it's one of the largest human-caused explosions to date, up to that point of human history, seen from miles away. Napoleon's troops have to abandon Africa and walk home. All right? The tide of history has changed, all because of a young lieutenant. Now, you need to create that climate. As leaders in our government, if you're not creating a willingness to listen and let people know that you're willing to take that information creatively, they're not, you know, people are very willing to keep their mouth shut. They need to be encouraged. They need to know that they can trust you, that they will be heard if they stick their head up. And every day you either encourage that or discourage that in the most subtle of ways. And so I encourage you to keep that in the back of your mind as be a creative listener. It's not just about what you say, but it's also how well you listen. Last story. I have won a lot of battles in this town. The two most important ways to win something in Washington, first, don't care about who gets the credit. You can get a lot done when you don't care about who gets the credit. But second, and more important, the one value that I have found that this town does not know how to deal with is persistence. If you are willing to be persistent and dogged and stay on it, you will win the day. This town doesn't know how to react to it. People give up easier and earlier than ever before. And steeling yourself and staying in the game and keeping focused and being persistent is more than half the battle. Now, I'll tell you one quick story. As many people know, in my most recent job, I got to be director of the National Zoo. There was a woman there named Deborah Klein, who was one of the first women to ever become a PhD conservation biologist. In fact, the whole term conservation biology was shaped by her. Zoos up to that point were pretty much just menageries. People would go see the animals, aren't they pretty? Deborah said, these animals are going extinct and we're doing nothing about it. We've got to do something. And like in any good leader, begin somewhere. She picked one animal, a little monkey about this big, or bright orange, called the golden lion tamarin from the forests of Brazil. Their numbers had fallen to under 200 in the wild. And they were going extinct, heading for the cliff. And Deborah says, we're going to do something about this. And she got every zoo to agree to put their monkeys together and breed them and try to create enough monkeys. And she had this crazy idea, we're going to breed them up and put them back in the wild. Well, this had never been tried before, and everybody thought she was crazy. But they got together, she organized this thing, she bred them up, paid attention for the first time to genetics, learned all this stuff, bred them up, took them down to Brazil, let them go, and they all died. Did she stop? Did she give up? She said to herself, how do I teach a monkey how to live in the wild? Well, she came back here to the National Zoo in Rock Creek and took the monkeys and said, we're going to let them go. Everybody says, what? We're going to let them go in Rock Creek. They're going to have to fend for themselves. We have hawks. We got owls that will be hunting them. They got to get inside for storms. They got to get their own food. They're going to have to handle it themselves. Everybody thought, this is crazy. They didn't even at that time have the technology to do radio collars. And I asked Deborah, I said, Deborah, you know, what would you think if they just ran away or you lost them? She says, well, John, they're bright orange. Any good birder can follow them. Okay. They did that. Let them out there for two summers. Brought them back in the winter. Took those monkeys down to Brazil. And guess what? They did not only survive, but they bred like rabbits. And today there's over 2,000 of them in the wild. It is one of the few species on the entire planet. Almost every species is going in the wrong trajectory. It is one of the few that has flattened out and is getting better, to the point where the IUCN has even downlisted their endangered status. Now, Deborah died 6 weeks ago of cancer. 3 days before she died, I'm on the phone with Deborah. Now, this had come out of nowhere. It was one of these cancers diagnosed, and boy, like 6 weeks later, she's on her deathbed. It was that quick. And, you know, nothing could be done. And here's a woman who, you know, at every instance, she could have been bemoaning her fate, could have been talking about all the could-haves, would-haves, should-haves. You know what Deborah talked to me about? John, how are we going to raise money for golden lion tamarins? We got to protect their habitat in Brazil. We got these islands, and if we don't connect them, the monkeys can't get together and continue breeding. You got to help me raise money for this. 3 days before she died. That is the level of persistence. She has been involved with tamarins for over 25 years. She never took her eye off that ball. She dogged it. She stayed with it. Failure didn't matter. She was going to figure out a way to get it done and deliver a home run. How many of us can look back at our life and say, we saved a species? She could. And she didn't stop fighting until the day she died. That is the level of persistence that is called of each of you. If you have it, trust me, you'll win. You will succeed in ways you can't even imagine. Because call it what you want, whether it's the good Lord, whether it's fates, whether it's just the tide of history, they all back persistence. And they will help you win the day. You all have invested mightily in your careers. The taxpayers are hoping you will mightily return. God bless you. God bless the United States of America. Thank you very much and congratulations.